I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, the federal government and the Trump administration is doing more to fight against anti-Semitism in our state than our local elected leaders are. Plus, outside last night's Riley Gaines event at the University of Washington, a detransitioner shares his story. And during this supposed budget crisis, your taxpayer money is paying for some really, really bad art. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at UndividedPod. That's UndividedPod.com. Hello, 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 and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much. I went for three hellos today. Usually do two, really spicing it up. Had an energy drink before the show, raring to go. Because Nicole and I were at UW. Not too late, but late for us last night. A lot to talk about today. But first, I think this one thing, I feel validated in my vote for Donald Trump over it. Did I say thank you for being here? Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Because thank you, I do mean that. I haven't wavered, I guess, in my vote in 2024 for Donald Trump. As you know, I voted for Hillary Clinton in 2016, couldn't vote for Trump in 2020, but in the middle of the pandemic here, absolutely was not going to vote for Joe Biden or a Democrat, so voted for a third party candidate, the Libertarian. I came around to Donald Trump very late, but what we're seeing right now validates the reason I voted for him. I mean, there are a few, you know, the choice between him and Kamala Harris, pretty clear. But what I saw in our state is this absolute vacuum of leadership where all these things are going wrong, right? Any measure of a successful state, our state was failing at. Homelessness, substance abuse, crime, affordability, education, you name it. Yet every step of the way, they just blame Donald Trump. Don't look at all these things we're failing at, Donald Trump. Don't look at all these things we're doing wrong, Donald Trump. Don't look at the $16 billion budget deficit, Donald Trump. And when they do that long enough, you start to realize that they're just a bunch of frauds and phonies. And that was part of my reason for saying, you know what? If they're blaming the guy that much and they refuse to take accountability for what they're doing, I'm going to vote for him. And what we're seeing right now is the federal government under Donald Trump doing more to deal with the problems in Washington state than our elected leaders here are. So, of course, on Monday night, you had left-wing extremists take over a building, the engineering building on the campus of the University of Washington. How many hours have gone by? 36, 40 hours at this point? Yeah, roughly. And our governor hasn't said anything. The mayor of Seattle hasn't said anything. You know who has said something? The Trump administration. Sending a clear message about what happened on our campus here, in our state. They care more about calling out this conduct, about condemning this conduct, and most importantly, about doing something about this conduct. So the Department of Education and the Department of Health and Human Services sent out a joint press release saying that they are initiating a review of anti-Semitic activity at the University of Washington. I'll just read a little bit from this. I won't read the full thing. U.S. Secretary of Education Linda McMahon, the violence and chaos that ensued on University of Washington's campus is yet another horrifying display of the anti-Semitic harassment and lawlessness which has characterized many of our nation's elite campuses over the last several years. This destructive behavior is unacceptable. Our task force will not allow these so-called protesters to disrupt campus life and deprive students, especially Jewish students who live in fear on campus, of their equal opportunity protections and civil rights. HHS Secretary Robert Kennedy said, "No institution that tolerates violence, harassment, or the open intimidation of Jewish students should expect to receive billions in taxpayer support. This isn't about politics. It's about whether a federally funded university is upholding the law, protecting civil rights, and fostering a safe environment for all students." How hard is that? Apparently pretty hard if you're a Washington State Democrat. But not only do we have the federal government and Donald Trump doing more to help the state of Washington then the freaking governor of the state of Washington, and then the party that's in power in the state of Washington. But just the opposite is happening here. They're actually condoning it, many of them. And silence is condoning it. So even the ones who haven't said something, that's condoning it. But I'm talking about actively condoning it, supporting it. This is honest to God, a post yesterday from State Representative Sean Scott, a socialist who was elected to represent a part of Seattle, the very city where that campus is. He says, I've gotten confirmation from Super UW, which is the group that was responsible for that destruction, that the arrested protesters have all been released. If they need additional support, I'll do my best to amplify how we may be able to help. So we have a state lawmaker who out in the open says that he wants to help what amounts to domestic terrorists. And for people who say this isn't terrorism, that's too, what is the definition of terrorism? For me, the definition of terrorism is a group of individuals or an individual that pursues violence to push their political or ideological agenda. That's the motivation of very well-known terror groups. They want obedience to a religion, to an ideology, to a political agenda, and they believe that carrying out violence in the pursuit of that agenda will help. That's terrorism. So these were pro-Palestine, but really just anti-Semitic, far-left extremists who carried out violence, lit fires, were confronted with police, barricaded themselves in a public building. Those are terrorists. By definition, look up the definition of terrorists. Those are terrorists. And we have a state representative who says, I'll do what I can to help them. We've reached out to his office, by the way. Nicole, any response yet? Didn't think so.
No.
Yeah, shock of the century. And it's not a surprise. We warned about Sean Scott when he was up for election this last cycle. He was just elected. He had come out and had press conferences in solidarity with the people who were blocking key infrastructure like I-5 and access to Seattle Tacoma International Airport, which again should have resulted in federal charges, but these people were just completely let off the hook. And he's basically, this is a proud tradition. This is a guy who, when he was running for city council several years ago, said he thinks every cop is racist. And this is the person who Seattleites sent to Olympia, not only to represent their interests, but to pass laws for the entire state of Washington. And he is now saying he'll do what he can to support terrorists who, and before we knew this next thing, he had put this out. I don't think it changes anything, but we learned from UW yesterday, $1 million in damages to that engineering building. And you might think, how is that possible? Well, it's a brand new building with some brand new, very expensive engineering equipment for students to use and learn on. Smashed it. These are pictures from Chris Daniels over at Como TV. University of Washington says in total, damage done, including to windows and things that were broken and furniture, but also to this very expensive engineering equipment, more than $1 million, which is very clearly felony destruction of property. Will any of them face felony destruction of property charges? I don't know. I guess they have to prove who did it. But we know right now they're facing slap on the wrist misdemeanors. Apparently UW police, and they told us this morning, because none of the cases that were referred or none of the arrests that were made were for felony property damage. So I think police, the university probably went in there and did an assessment of how many things had been destroyed. And we're told by UW this morning, they're continuing their investigation. And if they can piece evidence together that warrants asking prosecutors to charge for felony property, again, they have to figure out who it was. And this building, we learned, just was the state legislature just gave UW new funding for that building. Your tax dollars paid for those machines that were destroyed on Monday. And we have a state lawmaker, a public servant, who is using his platforms and his power and influence to say he's going to help in any way he can the people who did it. How is that not enough to kick him out of office? Of course, Seattle voters would have to have the will to do that. And Lord knows if you send a socialist with a well-documented history of supporting far-left extremist terrorists, they're probably not going to. But how is it acceptable? How is it okay? And still, and we reached out as well, I believe, to the Speaker of the House, Lori Jenkins. How many times when there's been a Republican who does something dumb, a Republican member of the state House, the state Senate, or Democrats come out and the state Republican leaders need to condemn this person, and they always do when it's justified. So House Speaker Lori Jenkins, we've emailed your office for comment. Haven't heard back, right? Yeah, didn't think so. Are you going to condemn this conduct by your caucus member condoning domestic terrorism and the destruction of more than $1 million in state property that our tax money went to? And if you don't, then you've lost all semblance of seriousness. Then you are a hypocrite to the extreme. And I know that those things are true, but gosh, every once in a while, I hope that you'll do the right thing. I mean, how hard is it genuinely to come out and to condemn what is clearly wrong? Absent any consideration for political party. It's one of the primary issues in this country on the right and left. We just see it here more on the left because we live in a very blue state where the far left does really crazy stuff. But let's be honest. I mean, you go online and people will excuse all measure of behavior on the right if they support Trump or whatever it is. And the left will go, oh, this is totally fine. You know, oh, we can break $1 million worth of equipment because we're fighting for Palestine. And you've got the state's top Democrats who stay silent about it as if they ever would do that. If it were somebody on the right who perpetrated it, give me a break. And you guys know this. You know this. And then you've got the UW president who's on her way out, obviously. But, you know, she's put out what is a strong statement. But it's like 2 years too late. You remember how she reacted to the takeover of the Quad by these anti-Semites and the destruction of buildings. I mean, anti-Semitic graffiti all over the beautiful old buildings. And it was like, tisk, tisk, it's okay. You know, you can stay, no big deal. I had to take a drink of water. Because I'm yelling. You can stay, no big deal. Eventually we'll clear you out. And then she started to get a little more upset when they targeted her home and her cars for vandalism, and then it was like, okay, now I'm a little more upset. And now she puts out this statement about what happened on Monday. This was no peaceful protest in support of Palestinian rights or against the war in Gaza. I condemn this dangerous, violent, and illegal building occupation and related vandalism. I also condemn, in the strongest terms, the group's statements celebrating the October 7th, 2023 attack. The university will not be intimidated by this sort of horrific and destructive behavior and will not engage in dialogue with any group using or condoning such destructive tactics. The problem is, you have in the past. When you say, we will not be intimidated by it, you have been in the past, didn't do anything about it. So that shows, that gives them, that emboldens them, right? We will not engage in dialogue. You have in the past, you literally held meetings with them. Like, let's have a summit with these domestic terrorists. Absolutely ridiculous. But now you want to draw a big line in the sand and say, we won't tolerate this. You think they believe you? No, and then we'll see what happens with charges, right? Are UW police going to continue to investigate? I mean, honestly, are they going to continue to refer more serious charges? We clearly should be looking at felonies here. Because too many times these left-wing morons, terrorists, have gotten away with way too much over the last 15 years. Light cop cars on fire? A few of you might get in trouble, but we'll reach a sweet plea deal with you. Take over a police precinct? No big deal. Have it. It's yours. Block I-5 for 5 hours, blocking ambulances and people who are having medical emergencies. That's okay. We'll send in our police negotiating team to sit there and laugh with you on the roadway and come to a good conclusion. Block access to Seattle-Tacoma International Airport so pilots have to literally get out of their car and walk to be able to make sure they get to their plane on time. No charges. It's not a big deal. So you can't foster this kind of environment and embolden them and embolden them and embolden them and don't expect their behavior to get continuously worse. Of course it will. So at some point there have to be real consequences, and maybe it's just going to have to be the feds that do it. Put them in federal prison. Find some sort of, I don't know if it's RICO, racketeering, whatever it is for these Antifa types. You can prove coordination in the pursuit of a cause. You could probably prove some money that's going around in these organizations to support their efforts. There has to be some sort of massive federal investigation, especially in Portland and Seattle, that can take down the Antifa crazies and put them in federal prison for a very, very long time. But it also starts with who condemns it. Now, I said, And I've been all over social media, and so have others. Where's Bob Ferguson? Where's the mayor of Seattle? They were having press conferences on other things, or putting press releases out on other things. How could they not have said anything? It's so simple. So 36 hours of pressure, we finally got a statement from Attorney General Nick Brown. His office put out this really weird graphics where it's like this picture of him, like this kind of hero picture, like I'm so tough. Yeah, took you 36 hours of public shaming to say this. Our office has been closely monitoring the disturbing events at the University of Washington this week in consultation with our client, the university. It is clear that there was substantial damage to public property and threats to the overall safety of the university community. I am thankful that those responsible were arrested and, if found guilty, should be held accountable. I fully and always support people's right to protest and to express their views. Indeed, it is foundational to our democracy. But everyone has a right to be safe on campus, and UW must enforce the law. What would have stopped you from saying that on Monday night? Or even, okay, I'll be generous, maybe you were sleeping Tuesday morning. Nothing. Public shaming is what changed it. And so when it takes 36 hours of public shaming, you can forgive me if I don't take you very seriously. Nick Brown, to me, has been the biggest disappointment of the 2024 election. He came in here, he sat down with us, he acted reasonable. I mean, he's still, you know, very, very along the lines of Bob Ferguson, very TDS, very anti-Second Amendment and all of those things. So certainly we didn't agree politically on an awful lot. But, you know, he tried to come across as very reasonable. He's not reasonable. And you know what? I don't even know what he is. I don't even know who he really is. I think just like Bob Ferguson, he is who he thinks he needs to be to get ahead. And what he saw is an attorney general who came before him in Bob Ferguson, who spent 5 years in full-blown TDS mode, suing Donald Trump at every available opportunity, ignoring anything bad that happened on the left or was perpetrated by Democrats. And Bob Ferguson was rewarded with the governor's mansion. So why would Nick Brown not just do the exact same thing? He's totally right to believe that voters one day will reward him for it, for his hypocrisy and for his cowardice with the governor's office. So he's doing what voters allow him to do. Absolutely insane. So that's Monday, and the latest that we know, again, more than $1 million in damages. Thank God the Trump administration takes this stuff seriously because leaders here don't. So then last night, of course, we were on campus, both Nicole and I, for an event that was held by Riley Gaines, of course, the outspoken former collegiate swimmer who is trying to protect girls' sports and has led to a lot of changes at the federal level and actions by President Donald Trump. So we decided to go, obviously, because of how bad things were on Monday. And we thought, gosh, if Riley Gaines is going to be there, this is going to be absolutely insane. So I will say there was probably at their peak maybe 100 anti-Riley Gaines. And there was also a young woman named Olivia who's been speaking with Riley Gaines at some of these events. And she was the one who was stopped. Her event was interrupted at UW a couple months ago. So they basically rescheduled it. So it was about 100 protesters outside. And Nicole and I, it was just like at that point, you're out there, just what? I mean, they're just acting unhinged. So we ended up going in and actually listening to Olivia and Riley speak. But, you know, I think what really struck me about this group of people and what continues to strike me about them and their mission. So we're talking about two different issues, right? There was like the anti-Israel thing on Monday. And this has to do with them thinking that Riley Gaines and anyone who believes that women's spaces should be protected from intrusion by men, that we're all transphobes, right? So you would think that this is a group of people that just wants to be accepted. Like, let's operate on that assumption. This is a group of people who just want to be accepted for who they are. And they want us to have, you know, to be understanding and to be inclusive, right? So let's operate in that framework. Because if that's what it was, if that's all this was, is, hey, I'm transgender and I just want to be understood and I want to be included and I don't want to be hated and all of that. That would be a much different situation, but that's not what this crowd came with. You know, for people who want desperately or who say they want inclusion and respect and understanding, here's how they treated individuals who were leaving the Riley Gaines event. So people would leave and they'd be directed to the parking lot. Police had to escort them out in groups because this mob of pro-trans, anti-Riley Gaines people were following them to their cars. And it didn't matter who came out. Young, old, boy, girl, didn't matter, student, didn't matter at all. They would harass them. And you tell me, so there's a woman who comes out, 50s or 60s, walking with a cane, just slow. Walking with a cane, just slow to her car. You tell me that these individuals shouting at her care about understanding, respect, and inclusion.
I'm not touching anyone. No, stop touching me. Don't touch me.
Give the lady space.
Please kill yourself.
You're obviously harassing her.
Transphobic bitch, die. Die, you bitch. Transphobic. You're the scum of the earth. You're so worthless. You produce nothing.
Oh, she's still going. Woo. I don't think she'd make it this far.
Yeah, telling a woman walking with a cane to her car. Scum of the earth. Hope you die. They were telling her that they wanted her to kill herself. You thought about killing yourself today. Hope you die in a car accident on your way home. And they care about respect and inclusion. No, they don't. Another example, an older couple walking out to their car.
Have you thought about killing yourself today? Have you thought about killing yourself?
The earth would be better without you.
Why you nourish the flowers if you have better use of fucking organic matter?
You'd actually be doing something if you were decomposing in the earth. Give back to the earth and kill yourself. Kill yourself, you old folks.
So are you going to kill yourself tonight and be a good boy?
It would be so beautiful to see your bodies hanging from the trees, swinging back and forth.
Are you going to be submissive and drop guys for me, babe?
Imagine if a rifle shot you in the head. You'd be so beautiful, Dad. Let's go around.
I bet your old ass blood is beautiful on the concrete.
I bet your blood is beautiful on the concrete. I wish you were hanging, swinging from a tree. You should be decomposing in the earth. How is that? I know free speech is a thing. How are those not threats of violence? How do those police officers not turn around and put them in handcuffs? Am I wrong? Is my interpretation of the law wrong? I believe you can say a lot of vile things because of the First Amendment. But I don't believe that you can follow someone to their car, stalk someone to their car, threatening their lives. And maybe they're getting around it in a creative way by saying, oh, I just wish you'd do it yourself. But when you get into the graphic nature, oh, your old blood would look good on the concrete. That's not a threat. That's not a threat. So let's get rid of any sort of insinuation that this is about respect and inclusion. It's not. It's not. It's about violence and it's about hate. And then they wonder why people don't support their cause. They wonder why, hey, maybe I don't want a transgender individual who's a biological man who shows violent tendencies like that in a women's restroom. Like, maybe you're not setting the best example for making your case. So I talked to some people who are sane outside the event last night. I want to play a little bit of that. So again, it comes into this whole, these are people who want inclusion and understanding and respect and all this. And oh, words are violence, by the way. So this is the crowd that thinks words are violence. Yet, I mean, they use vile, disgusting language all the time. I spoke to a fan of our show, Lisa Olson, from Pierce County, who was out as she was outside waiting to go into the Riley Gaines event.
Why are you here?
I'm here because I love Riley Gaines and what she stands for and what she believes in, that she stood up for her, what happened to her, and has continued her fight for women and keeping men out of women's sports, and especially in high school here, like in Washington State. But mostly, I wanted to see what was going to be here based off of last night's craziness, because Washington State's insane. And I'm offended now today, and I'm glad I came to see it with my own eyes, because the media doesn't tell us anything. Well, you do. And Jordan Cho does, and Turning Point and all that, but it says God is a dyke, and I'm a Christian. Olivia jerks off to Jesus. I mean, so why can't I say men shouldn't be in women's sports, but they can say Olivia jerks off to Jesus? It makes no sense.
It's a good question.
Either we be equal in not forcing each other to accept each other's ideologies, or you know, a protest, this is not going to solve the problem. So hopefully bridges can be built with those stories like mine just now, how I feel. So.
Yeah, hopefully you could hear her while they absolutely desecrated that good old-fashioned American tune. Yeah, I mean, again, they're just absolute hypocrites because our words are violence and it's horrible hatred to say that men aren't women. But you can say Olivia, who's like 20-something, like in her early 20s, that she jerks off to Jesus. Absolutely ridiculous. All right, I want to play this interview I did outside the Rally Gaines event because I always think the stories of detransitioners are so fascinating and they're so important. Yet you have this whole segment of society that wants you to accept trans people but doesn't want to hear a word from someone who thought they were trans, even went as far as transitioning, and then realized it was a terrible mistake and detransitioned. It's like, I want to hear all the good things, but none of the bad things from the medicalization of children. So Anna is a man, says, I'm a man. But at one point made a full medical transition at a very young age to try to appear as a woman and is out in front of this event, very brave. Anna was very brave, holding a sign that said, protect women from onagonophilia, which if you're not familiar with that, that is a medical term for men who are sexually aroused by dressing and presenting as a woman. So Anna is very much of the belief that a lot of what we're seeing, men who identify as women, this is Anna's opinion, suffer from onagonophilia. And so had this sign, and of course the protesters didn't like that very much, and they had no interest in the world about actually hearing the story of someone who transitioned and then detransitioned. So I talked to Anna a little bit about his story and about how he changed his mind about this notion that had really been pushed on him at a young age that he was in the wrong body.
I medicalized 17 years ago at an LGBT center. I'm a CSA survivor. Doctors told me that what was wrong with me and how I felt about my body was not from CSA, even though I went there and said, did CSA make me this way?
CSA?
Yes, a childhood sexual assault. And they said no. They said no. They said being gay is innate and being trans is innate and what you have is gender identity disorder. They diagnosed me with gender dysphoria and I believed their bullshit for about 17 years.
Wow. So for you, I mean, to what extent did you go through an actual attempt? Are you willing to tell me everything that you went through?
Maybe. Yeah, so I had FFS, I had SRS, I had an orchiectomy, I had facial feminization surgery, I had sex reassignment surgery, I was on HRT for 17 years, now I'm on a combo dose because I can't go off, I have multiple health conditions from transitioning young and for transitioning for so long.
Wow. So what was it for you that kind of woke you up to, this isn't what I should have done?
I found out that homosexual transition was environmentally caused in almost every single case by childhood sexual assault or by internalized homophobia or failed boy syndrome. 92.5% of trans-identified males are straight and bisexual, and the only explanation for a straight or bisexual man to transition is autogynephilia. So from my perspective, I went there and I was given a blanket diagnosis. It's given to anybody who has a body issue as a child nowadays.
Did they ever try to refer you to like a therapist or any?
I went to therapy for a year. I saw psychologists. I was diagnosed. It took a year back then, not 15 minutes. And I was in the South on the East Coast. But they still believed that transsexualism was innate, that gender identity was this innate disorder that people just had. And like CSA didn't really rule you out.
So, you know, having this is your experience. You actually went through this and you're still, I mean, you still have the effects of it. How do you find your story received by people who continue to sort of push medicalization?
They hate me. They call me a bigot. They say that trans women are women. They say that gender dysphoria is a valid diagnosis. I've combed through trans history. I've read all of the old academics who created this. If you go back to like the early 1900s, transition was conceived by old academics who were trying to find a way for homosexuals to exist in a fascist world in Europe. Havelock Ellis, Magnus Hirschfeld, that's why it was made. It just so happens that AGP is also real, and that got latched onto. A bunch of AGPs transitioned, and fast forward 100 years ago, and we have 100 years forward, and we have an ideology that's based on lies that kids are told to as soon as they have issues. And God forbid you're effeminate and you believe that something's wrong with you as a man because you like pretty things and are sassy.
So how do you identify now?
I'm a gay man.
A gay man. And I mean, for people around you, have you lost friends or anyone by detransitioning?
I was canceled by every friend I had who was liberal in this city and had to leave the city.
And you live here?
I live outside of the city now because I had to leave.
So how old are you now?
I am 34 and
so
married.
What is the message that you would send? I mean, obviously there's protesters here. You know, Riley Gaines, she's not necessarily talking about transitioning and all that. She's talking more about men and girls sports. But for you, what do you want people to know by hearing your story, that you're willing to come here, even though you know that your message will probably make them angry? Why is it important for you to be here?
Because people are being lied to when they're being diagnosed. They're not being diagnosed with what actually causes the gender dysphoria. They're just being diagnosed with a symptom of a problem. And there are multiple problems that cause those symptoms. And when you don't appropriately diagnose people, you lead them into a life of ruin. All of these interventions are permanent, they're irreversible, and they lied to me. I want people to know that they're lying to people. They're not diagnosing autogynephiles as autogynephiles. I have friends who medicalize all the way and are self-admitted AGP who were never diagnosed with the reason they feel this way. They were just transitioned.
Who do you blame for that? Is it the doctors? Is it politicians? Is it the media? Who do you blame for this sort of fast-tracking of medicalizing children?
I think after gay marriage was won, there was an empty hole in gay politics. We had gotten everything we wanted, and I think trans jumped into all of the orgs that were associated with the gay community, and they lobbied to make gender identity a protected thing. They started doing that in the 90s, and I think this is a byproduct of the trans community intentionally watering things down and lobbying so everybody can have access, and they don't care about the people who are indoctrinated, who are harmed by this loosey-goosey system where you can walk into a therapist in 15 minutes and be given a gender dysphoria diagnosis.
And what do you think it'll take to fix it?
It's going to take lawmakers to step up and shut it down.
Yeah, amen. And so brave of Anna to be there and hold that sign. And at one point, the Antifa types were like right in front of him just like that and just staring him down. And Anna didn't care at all. And I think those stories are so fascinating. And I've said this a million times that if you're talking about any medical procedure or condition, wouldn't you want to know the pros and cons? I mean, it's just like a side effect with a drug, right? Wouldn't you want to know the potential negative implications of doing what you're about to do for anything? But for some reason, when it comes to gender-affirming surgeries, which is a farce, when it comes to mutilating kids, we can't talk about it. It's transphobic to even talk about the fact that there are detransitioners who regret it, who it's ruined their lives, who've experienced all these other things after the fact. Can't talk about any of that. This is like the only medical procedure where you're not allowed to. You're a transphobe if you talk about the potential negative implications of it. Absolutely insane. So I showed you a little bit what happened outside the event. I will say the only skirmish, I made the stupid mistake of going over to Antifa and the protesters. They were protesters last night. Although they did throw bags of human feces at people, which is disgusting. I made the mistake, the cardinal sin of going over there and asking them nicely if any of them would like to do a news interview. Literally, I was like, anybody actually want to do an interview and talk a little bit? And I can talk to you about why you don't like Riley Gaines or anything. And there was these, the ones that are all in black, the ninja cosplayers who were like, no, B word and all this. And in my face, and our security tried to just put a nice arm between me and them because they were up in my business and brushing across my breasts, which made me very uncomfortable. And one of the larger members of Antifa, and by larger, I don't mean high, I mean wide, threw a punch at one of our security guards and hit him in the back. And then they threw a couple back and landed a few, so good for them. But that was it, and I shouldn't have gone over there. I shouldn't have tried to do my job and ask them genuinely if they'd like to share their position on things with us. Just crazy. But inside the event, of course, Riley and Olivia both spoke, and Riley talked about her experience meeting and hearing the stories of young women here who we've featured on this show, who have, I think, been pivotal in trying to get public opinion on their side of this issue. One of them, and the last time I saw Riley Gaines was at a Lincoln Day dinner where we both spoke in Wenatchee, and Annalee Wilson, who you've heard her story many times here, who lost at the Junior Olympic track meet to a biological boy, is just one of the many young women in this country who's inspired Riley in this fight.
She got up and basically shared her story, and it broke my heart into two. This young girl, I mean, maybe 15 years old, she's left to bear the burden. What does she do? No one else is defending her. Her coaches weren't defending her. Of course, your governor, your attorney general's not defending her. What was she left to do? She had to stand up for herself, and for that, she was ostracized. Lost friends, lost opportunities. I mean, really, really tragic stuff that no 14, 15-year-old girl, no person, for that matter, should ever have to go through. So it persists here in this state as well.
Yeah, and Riley deserves so much credit for giving these young girls the confidence to speak out. Talk about a good role model. If it weren't for people like Riley and like Olivia, who you'll hear from momentarily, I don't know if it would have been as easy a task, and I'm not saying it was ever easy for these young girls, but as realistic a task for them to come out and speak out publicly against biological boys competing against them, something no 14, 15-year-old should ever have to do. You should have politicians standing up for you. You should have adults and coaches and parents standing up for you. But for some of them, you know, no one at their school, no one in the decision tree would stand up for them. So at 14, 15, I mean, you know what you were doing at 14 and 15. I wasn't thinking about standing up for a cause I believed in, have had to do this. But they've been able to look to people like Riley Gaines and like Olivia, who spoke last night, for inspiration. So Olivia, we talked about her previously on the show because she tried to have one of these speeches at UW a couple months ago. They ended up surrounding the building. She was held hostage, essentially, in the building, had to be escorted out by police. They were breaking the windows to the room, all this crazy stuff. And she's, I don't know, I think she said 24, maybe? She's like early 20s. She's not very old. But just, again, so brave. And she started speaking out about this issue after she turned in, she went to college in Cincinnati, and she turned in this assignment where she was talking about Riley Gaines in her assignment. This is very recently. And she got an F. Like, they failed her in the class for it. And that was one of the things that got her interested in speaking out about this. So last night she spoke about, you know, what she experienced at the University of Washington last time she was here and going home and having to explain to her mom why she still thinks it's worth it to be doing this.
And my mom asked me, she's, you know, her daughter was just held hostage. She's a little on the fence about this. Why do you keep doing this? Why do you keep putting yourself in this situation? It's dangerous. Someone has to. No one else is doing it. Me and Riley, okay, that's two people. Someone has to do it. You know why? There are so many people who need help, even in just this room. But in 2024, I had 671 people ask me for help. That's a lot. 671 Instagram DMs saying I have been failed, unfairly failed or censored for being a conservative, for sharing my conservative beliefs on campus. I had to compete against a man in my sport. I had to undress in front of a man in my locker room. 671. That's a lot of people.
Yeah, and it's just awesome. I mean, those two women, far braver than anything I've done on this show or had to do in my life, and for them to go out and risk bodily injury to just say a simple truth, men are not women and men don't belong in women's spaces, is astounding. Seeing those young women on stage surrounded by four big beefy security guards. You can't be on stage in the United States of America without four security guards surrounding you to talk about the fact that men don't belong in women's sports. Utterly nuts. So glad that they were able to make it, though. And they were able to deliver their remarks without any interference. So I will give credit to the University of Washington Police and to the Seattle Police Department for making sure that things stayed pretty orderly at the event last night. definitely a lot different than what happened on Monday. All right, coming up next, Bob Ferguson is about to seal Washington State's fate, happening any minute now. He's going to sign rent control. Also, some cuts to housing programs in our state that the Trump administration has deemed too woke. First, a lot is happening with the economy right now. Of course, the tariff saga is not over. If you're a little bit panicked about what it could be doing to your retirement portfolio, especially if you're getting very close to retirement, totally understandable. Our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital is having a webinar that is right up your alley, though. So it's going to be a tariff edition of their live webinars that they do to help people understand their retirement portfolio, the risk that it's exposed to, how to properly manage that risk. And they've been getting a lot of questions. And Zach says, all of us, I mean, he has so many clients who ask, who are wanting to know, you know, how concerned should I be about the tariff situation? So he figured they'd have a live webinar where you can come on for free, ask any questions you have, listen to their thoughts on how the market is reacting to tariffs, how they could impact retirement portfolios, a little bit of a longer term outlook for 2025. And then they'll also do a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So sign up for Zach's free webinar, Tariff Edition. Thursday, May 22nd is when it's happening, but you can sign up today. Register for free at knowyourriskradio.com. That's knowyourriskradio.com. Okay, as we said on the show yesterday, Bob Ferguson has supported rent control all along. He stayed silent during the legislative session, but a fellow Democrat said, oh no, he told us week two of the session he supported rent control. And he just wanted to put on this facade that he was a moderate, and then ultimately he's going to sign it, which you can't be a moderate and sign statewide rent control. You can't be a moderate and sign reparations. You can't be a moderate and sign the largest tax increase in our state's history into law. So let's just forget about that. Any notion that we might have had or hope that we might have had is completely dashed. And it will be further dashed at 1 p.m. when he actually puts pen to paper and signs House Bill 1217. So you already know what it'll do across the state. It'll cap yearly rent increases at 7% plus inflation up to 10%. So I don't know how quickly we're going to see the impact of it, but we will see the impact of it. Rent control has failed in individual cities. It's going to fail in our state as well. I think you're going to have a massive push of people selling their rental units. I'll have to check in with our friend Wes Jones about that, because he already has had an uptick in individuals who own property as an investment property, have been renting it out, and just aren't willing to do it anymore because of this that's coming, but all the other policies that have been anti-landlord that have allowed for this squatting debacle that we're in. So if I were a betting woman, I'd say Wes is probably going to have an uptick in landlords wanting to unload their rental units, which is just going to hurt our housing market even further. Our housing market is already in a state of despair. It's expensive to live here, very expensive to live here. And, you know, as much as they wring their hands about, oh, housing affordability, and this is going to make it worse, they know it's going to make it worse. It's not an opinion. It's a fact. It has everywhere else it's ever been tried. And Bob Ferguson's going to be the one to sign it after promising on the campaign trail that he was going to dramatically expand the new home construction. Yeah, Bob, as the builders have told you, and I know that they've told your office this repeatedly over the last 4 months, we will not build as much in this state if you sign rent control. Developers will not develop in this state as much if you sign rent control. And when you're not building as many homes, when you're not expanding communities, when you're not building these high-rise apartment complexes in cities, then you're also not building the businesses that help to serve that population of people. So this is going to decimate our economy. It's going to further put our housing market in a state of decline. And this is the party that says homelessness is a housing issue, which isn't true, of course. But if they really believe that, then I'm only left to believe that you're intentionally making homelessness worse so you can continue to feed money into the homeless industrial complex and to your friends and allies to do absolutely nothing with it but squander it and pad their own pockets. So 1 p.m., Bob Ferguson doing exactly what we all suspected he would do all along, kowtowing to the far left progressives. All right, speaking of housing, gosh, thank you, Donald Trump. I know I've been hard on you. I know I've said you're not helping us quick enough. And I still do believe that. I would like to see things get better here, but I think you're working on it. And one of the areas where they say that they're going to try to improve things in Washington state is by eliminating some of these, frankly, racist housing programs. So the White House literally titled this Cuts to Woke Programs and had a whole long list of programs they characterize as woke. And they say that that includes pathways to removing obstacles to housing. So it says these Department of Housing and Urban Development housing grants use taxpayer dollars to fund local governments that pursue radical racial, gender, and climate goals. And they give some examples. For example, HUD provided $6.7 million to Los Angeles County to conduct an equity audit and reverse land use patterns that have roots in systemically racist policies. Great use of money there. And then they give us an example. $5 million went to the city of Seattle under this Pathways to Removing Obstacles housing program to, quote, redress past harms through a legacy home ownership program that targeted Black, Indigenous, people of color residents at risk of displacement. So basically, they're saying the federal government is not going to continue to give millions of dollars to cities for housing programs that are racist and that exclude helping certain people based on skin color, and that target certain populations that they say are disproportionately targeted or whatever it is. So they're saying, we're just not going to do it anymore. So, of course, Democrats here do not like that. In particular, U.S. Senator Patty Murray of our state is very, very upset. This from the Seattle Times. Trump budget would slash money for housing programs in Washington. So it includes a 23% cut to domestic programs in his initial budget proposal across the board. And it says it would reduce the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development's funding by nearly 44%, that's according to Patty Murray's office, including a 43% cut to rent assistance for people living on low incomes. It says Murray, a Democrat, said the move would rip the roofs off Americans' heads and put even more families at risk of homelessness. She said, while they are billed as cuts to programs, or this is from the Low Income Housing Institute Executive Director Sharon Lee, while they are billed as cuts to programs, they are really attacks on people who are poor and homeless, people who have little power and leverage in Washington, D.C. And that's the nonprofit that operates these tiny home villages in Seattle. So here's the thing. We've been failing on the housing front for years and years and years. And Patty Murray says, oh, it's going to put more families at risk of homelessness. You know what else is? Rent control. Rent control will put more families at risk of homelessness. You know what else does? Substance abuse. The crisis that has grown exponentially in our state above and beyond most other states in the union because of our soft on crime, pro-drug policies. So they really pick and choose. You know, and I'm like, I do believe there should be some semblance of a social safety net for people who have worked or fallen on hard times or, you know, are just on the cusp of homelessness. I'd rather keep them in their home if it's a little bit of money rather than put, you know, this whole dramatic situation that's going to throw them into on the government teat to the tune of tens of thousands of dollars over years. But I don't support picking and choosing what aspects of the housing crisis you care about. And picking and choosing when you're going to speak out about programs that will make the housing crisis worse or make housing more affordable. So you can't complain about this and then complain and then support rent control. You can't complain about this and then fund a homeless industrial complex that's wasting billions of dollars and not actually getting people out of homelessness. So I'd take you more seriously if you were consistent on these issues, but you're not. And this is a common theme lately for Senator Patty Murray, who was going across the state, remember, making her little silly social media videos, going to all these businesses that were going to be decimated by Trump's tariffs, not saying anything about the $9.5 billion in new taxes just passed by Democrats in Olympia, the vast majority of which are going to be taxes on businesses. Literally, while she's putting that video out, it was the same day they pushed through the increase in the B&O tax. So you can't take her seriously. She doesn't care about people. She cares about politics. And she'll speak out about whatever helps her party and her political agenda. Give me a break. All right. In our segment, Unbelievable, I think Nicole and I are going to have a little competition. Okay. We'll talk about it. And the real crappy art that your hard-earned money is going to pay for in our segment, Unbelievable. Next, first, take the first mark challenge today. At least today, schedule time to take the first mark challenge. I think that's the biggest, it has to be one of the only barriers for people because I've been talking about first mark insurance for a long time. We talk all the time about these first mark victories, and I have a great first mark victory. I mean, Mike and I, when we got married, we decided after years of hearing our friend Dory talk about first mark on the radio that we'd take the first mark challenge. They were thinking about becoming an advertiser on our show, and I was like, I want to see what first mark's all about. Loved it. We learned so much through the first mark challenge about our insurance, the insurance we had, how we were paying for things we didn't need, how we were underinsured in certain areas. And then they went out and they shopped the market for us and they came back and it was all so simple and they explained what everything meant, what all the coverage meant, made it make sense. We're saving a ton of money now based on our last renewal. And the customer service is just so great. So it's free and you can save money, which to me is just a no-brainer. So do it today. Take, at least put it on your schedule. Hey, I'm going to take the First Mark challenge on this day and I'm going to call them on this day or whatever it is and just get the process started, because so many of our viewers and listeners save hundreds, if not thousands of dollars a year. And I know we could all use who could not use a couple extra $1,000 a year? FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance company. So they're always going to have your best interest in mind. All right, you taxpayers are footing the bill for some really, really horrible artwork. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. So you know by now that we have this art program in Washington State. I think it's 1% of general fund dollars, isn't it? It's something like that. Has to be used on public art, which is just dumb. We don't need to spend taxpayer money and have an actual, oh, we have to send this percentage on art to beautify our public spaces. I did a story years and years ago, back when I was still in radio, like 15 years ago. Actually, it was for Dory. Dory Monson used to put me on these stories and assignments and go track this down and see if it's true. And it was art built at a dump site. Like transfer station. And it was a big polar bear. And the polar bear was made out of the fronts of discarded refrigerators and freezer doors.
Wow.
And it cost like $250,000.
Oh my gosh.
They paid like $250,000 because they have this budget they have to spend, right, on art. So they'll write these massive checks for some crappy piece of art just so they could be like, oh, we've spent our art budget. So that's the case here. Our friends at Doge Washington, which you can follow them on X @wake_upwa, always finding these little gems. Amid a $16 billion deficit and record tax increases on Washingtonians, the Democrat-controlled legislature gave $20,000 to an out-of-state artist, Sarah Sistream, so they could hang her art, in quotes, at a Des Moines elementary school. So look, okay, the art program is a big beast. We could go line by line through a lot of this art, I'm sure, and find some art that is not worth what the state paid for it. I think that's a bigger conversation. But also the fact that we're paying out-of-state artists. If we have an arts program in Washington State, why would we not use it to pay local artists? Even if those local artists suck, I'd rather pay a local artist that money and keep that money here in our state, in our economy, through a program that's funded with our taxpayer money, than to give it to some artist, in this case, someone from Portland. So Sarah Suzanne Seastream, you can find, by the way, on ArtsWA, they have like an artist roster, so you can see who they're giving money to make art for the state of Washington. So just connecting the dots here, the only pieces of art that we can find in the state that are public art created by this Sarah Seastream are these two pieces that are at a Des Moines elementary school, North Hill Elementary in Des Moines. One of them, go ahead, Nicole, big reveal. One of them is called Loving You from a Safe Social Distance. Okay. And the other one is called Fish Dreams. And by the way, these were very clearly already artworks that she'd created and just sold to the state of Washington. Like one, this one says it's from 2012. Fish Dreams. Tell me what about that. Is the fish dreaming of dying?
Or is a human dreaming of fish?
Is the human dreaming of murdering a fish? Because I just see the red. It looks like blood. And what is the loving you from a safe social distance? So I guess I'm kind of trying to, look, I know art's subjective, but that looks like a mason jar filled with red beads to me.
It does. That's so funny.
Yeah. So here's what I want to do, Nicole. We'll do this tonight. And it's Scout's Honor.
Mm-hmm.
What is Scout's Honor? Four fingers or three?
I'm not really sure.
I know it's not.
I wasn't in Scouts.
Two, right? Okay. anyway, here's what we'll do. We will tonight, each of us, we have 5 minutes. That's it. And you can only have 5 minutes. Maybe we do it together on FaceTime tonight.
Okay.
And you can only use gray, black, and red.
Okay.
And we will both create a piece of art in less than 5 minutes. And then for our daily subscriber show poll tomorrow, we'll ask you to judge whose art is best. And we won't say which one is Nicole's or not. So we'll compare it to...
Is it going
to
be Fish Dreams?
Fish Dreams. Yep, Fish Dreams.
Got to have the same name.
So Fish Dreams, you do one 5 minutes. I do one 5 minutes. Fish Dreams from Sarah Seastrom, which cost us somewhere in the range of $20,000 as taxpayers. And then we'll see, maybe we sell our art. Maybe we see if we can sell it for $20,000 to fund Undivided. I don't know.
Wow.
You don't think so? You don't think anybody will buy it?
I hope they will, but I don't know that I'm giving it to the business. I'm going on vacation.
I will sell it to the highest bidder on YouTube.
I love it.
But we'll see which one wins in the Daily Subscriber Show poll, okay?
Okay, deal.
All right, in high school, I was named in the yearbook. Couple weird things. Most likely to become president, biggest partier, and most artistic.
Wow.
I had all three. Yeah, wide range, really. Wide that range. Is. President, yeah, partier, most artist. Artistic. So does that worry you about your chances of...
Nah, I'm pretty crafty myself.
Okay. See, that's two of us that lack a little humility, isn't it?
Yeah.
Speaking of...
I think I was voted either smiley or most friendly or something like that.
I can see that. Yeah. You are a pretty friendly person. Speaking of humility, just really quick, off topic, but I look forward to this. This is going to be a lot of fun tomorrow. Mine is going to obviously be superior. When we were at this protest last night, they just resort to personal attacks, right? They really couldn't find any on me. And you know, I always talk about I'm humble. You know what one of them was trying to diss? My hair. I'm like, and it's this dude reaching. That had eyeliner and it's all you could see because he was in black. And he was talking about my hair and my curls. And I go, now I know you're reaching. I go, now I know you're reaching because my hair is flawless. And I think he thought that was funny. I said, your eyeliner does look good, though. I should get some tips from you on eyeliner because I thought it was very well applied.
Yeah.
Very smoky eye.
It was an interesting group. It was like the leftover group from
Monday Yeah, whoever
night.
Didn't get arrested on Monday night. And then they just switched from, you know, oh, anti-Israel to, oh, everybody's a transphobe. Mm-hmm, but yeah. And then I had a member of Antifa call me charismatic. And I was like,
burn.
I go, wait a second. I said, thank you. And then he or she said something to the effect of, so why does your reporting suck so bad? Like, you're obviously very charismatic. So why does your reporting suck so bad? I'm like, oh, I'm going to take that compliment from you, Antifa.
Run with it.
Yeah, you don't get those very often. All right, we'll get to some national news coming up next. First, as I mentioned, we should check in with Wes Jones on this because I imagine that he's going to be hearing from a lot of landlords who want to sell their rental units. So if you're one of them, Wes is a landlord himself, and I know he's been contemplating it for sure, especially with rent control happening. He's your guy on this because he has that tie to it and that personal experience with it. So Wes Jones and his team at sellwithwes.com. First, their marketing is second to none. Compare their, go to Wes's Facebook page, Wes Jones and Associates, compare their marketing material when they list a home for sale to other home listings that you see on the market. And you'll be like, it's not even close. And that's really key to making sure that you're bringing in potential home buyers and you're getting top dollar for a home. I mean, the way they stage homes, absolutely beautiful. And they have something called the Listing Boost Concierge Service, where they'll come in and they can help you make cosmetic upgrades to your home, take all of that off your plate, even can help you so you don't have to pay for it till closing, because it's coming out of pocket for all of that upfront can be a little bit nerve wracking. So reach out to our friend Wes Jones, sellwithwes.com, particularly right now if you're trying to sell a rental unit. I think he's the guy to help you out with that. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, I am just super torn on this one. So of course, Donald Trump, and this goes back to his first term as well, doesn't want transgender people in the military. And there are concerns about unit cohesion, for instance, and about, frankly, mental health. And this idea of gender dysphoria. And are you mentally unwell if you believe that you're in a different body? There are some people who would just say yes. I mean, obviously, that's a mental disorder that you're going through, so maybe you aren't fit for fighting. So you'll recall, this is from PBS News, there was a Seattle judge that had actually struck down Donald Trump's ban on transgender military members, but now the Supreme Court is allowing the ban to take effect, at least for now. So it says, in the case the justices acted in Tuesday, U.S. District Court Judge Benjamin Settle in Tacoma judge, not a Seattle judge, had ruled for several long-serving transgender military members who say that the ban is insulting and discriminatory and that their firing would cause lasting damage to their careers and reputations. The Trump administration offered no explanation as to why transgender troops who have been able to serve openly over the past 4 years with no evidence of problems should suddenly be banned, Settle wrote. The judge is an appointee of Republican President George W. Bush and is a former captain in the U.S. Army Judge Advocate General's Corps. So that was the initial ruling, and the Supreme Court says that the ban can take effect for now. So it's an early win for President Donald Trump. And the way that it's structured isn't just like, hey, if you're transgender, you can't be in the military. You have to have like a diagnosed gender dysphoria. So if you've been diagnosed with gender dysphoria, they basically look at it as a mental health disorder that would disqualify you from military service. And it would include people who are already in the military. And I asked you guys, Nicole, do you have our show poll for today? I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll on Patreon, Locals, and X about this because I'm really torn on it. I do believe there is a good argument to be made about some people who identify as a gender other than the gender they were born, who are clearly dealing with mental health issues. I mean, we saw that on full display last night. I don't know if that's the case for everyone, though. And we used to just call them cross-dressers, right? I mean, I think there are some people who haven't done any medical intervention, but they just choose like, hey, I want to dress like a woman. I used to have a next door neighbor that was a man, very clearly dressed as a woman, perfectly nice. And I don't know about their mental state, but I just think that like, if you've already been serving the country and there haven't been any complaints, there hasn't been any concern in the military about your conduct, do you really kick that person out? Someone who's willing to serve their country? I struggle with that one quite a bit. So I asked you guys about it in our daily subscriber show poll on Patreon, Locals, and X. Do you support firing existing transgender U.S. service members? Pretty split, 60-40. Kyle says absolutely. Anything requiring continuing medical treatment takes away from combat readiness. Even eczema can cause a medical discharge. Yeah, a lot of medical conditions that can be disqualifying for the military, for sure. And I mean, it's like a long, long list of things. Becky, no, as anything else, they must be judged on their merit only. If they are doing the job asked of them within the guidelines of the gender they identify as, I have no problem with it. In the same note, they should not get extra promotion points for being transgender. That was the problem with the previous system. DEI in itself is not an issue. I accept all people as long as they are not abusing me or other rights. DEI being used as a qualification multiplier is completely wrong. Yeah, and I definitely don't think they should get preference. Hold on, I have to drink because my throat. I think that energy drink, I was, so you didn't see it, but I had this graphic up and I was like, Nicole, I need something to drink. So she brought me her water bottle. Thank you.
Well, it's funny because your hand signal was like you wanted a little espresso. I'm like, I don't have time to make you an espresso.
Oh, that's because I always drink an espresso, so I'm used to holding mini cups. No, I was over here like, Nicole, I need some water. And she's like, what are you trying? Go get me an espresso. All right, Sydney, it depends on the individual. I do think it should be an individual thing. Again, if you've been serving for 4 years or whatever it is, like you, if you've served in Afghanistan and now you're going to kick that person out, who's like served their country honorably up to this point, I just don't agree with that. Nicole, what do you think?
No, I'm probably with you on that. I think those are very few because I know somebody that's transgender and has been living their life just the way they want it for years. And I think that the current atmosphere has made it more difficult on that person.
Yeah.
And I mean, I just don't care what you do as an adult, as long as it's not affecting anybody else and you can still, you know, pass the physical test, pass the mental test, all of that. I don't really care what you do as an adult. Now, again, I don't think we should give them special treatment.
Yeah.
But I think as long as they're doing their job and passing the test, then it's fine.
Yeah. Todd says, if you aren't serving or have not served, I'm not a fan of your opinion. I don't know if you're talking to me. I mean, I have not served, I have an opinion show. So that's my opinion. I just don't, across the board, it doesn't sit right with me.
Yeah.
Doesn't sit right with me, especially when we have so few people willing to fight, especially when we've had recruitment challenges. We have so few people who are willing to wear the cloth of this country and put their lives on this mm-hmm. on the line for this country, something I was clearly not brave enough to do and would not be brave enough to do really under any circumstance. Mm-hmm. Then who am I to say that that person who is brave enough to do that and who has done that honorably without any issues should be yanked out of the military because they want to dress like a girl when they're not in uniform? I don't know.
Again,
I don't
now, know. New members, so because I think there's this like social contagion right now, they might need some new guidance on that. But members that have served for years, I think that they shouldn't be impacted by this.
Yeah. Chris says, should we allow people who think they're giraffes to join the military? How about schizophrenics? This should not even be a question that we would indulge people who are mentally ill. And hey, I'm fine with that opinion. I don't know, again, and I've said this about transgender individuals, I don't know the depths of the mysteries of this universe. For all I know, in 20 years, we could actually find that there's some genetic abnormality that actually makes people believe or born. I don't know how all the inner workings of the body and the brain or what happened. So I'm not going to sit here and say I definitively know that all these people are absolutely mentally ill. I just can't do that. I just go back to, they're doing something for our country. If they've done it honorably, I don't care if they identify as a giraffe in their free time, then, you know, whatever it is. Leslie, no, but they need to be put through all the competency tests other military people go through. Oh, 100%. Yeah,
that's, I mean, it thing. Has no to special across treatment. The board.
No special treatment. All right. So often transgender people don't seem to be playing with 52 cards. And I mean, I agree that there's a lot of challenges. You just look at last night, like them screaming at elderly people, like death threats and I want to see you hanging from a tree. Those are those two people who are following all these individuals. Those are two mentally unbalanced people who should have frankly been arrested. And I think we should ask UWPD why that didn't rise to the level of being threats of violence. Right. I don't know, because it just really threw me off.
I also think they're just people that are looking for that negative attention. Like, yeah. I don't know that they truly believe what they think they believe. They're just there to antagonize.
Yeah, and I hate to give them like, there was a point last night where I'm like, all right, let's leave, because, you know, nothing's going on, and I think my presence there, or even Jonathan Cho's presence, or whoever it is, there's this element of, are we here because they're here, and are they still there because we're here? Right. So I'm like, let's just go. But it's like,
I was mentioning this last night, but I just wish that we would do these events, you know, in Maple Valley and fill them with a bunch of girls that could use that message.
Yeah.
But instead, we're in Seattle, and everybody's scared to come there, and, you know, nobody wants to lose their friends, so nobody from, you know, it was a small crowd.
Yeah, small crowd.
And it was mostly older people, and it wasn't the people that Riley's trying to talk to, really.
And I would have loved to see those Antifa morons say those things to little girls,
right,
and see how that went over. I mean, woman walking with, I was told she's not actually elderly. I said elderly, and now I feel bad. I only saw her from behind. She had a gray ponytail.
It was the cane.
And then I saw pictures of her from the front. I was like, oh, she doesn't look elderly, does she?
I know, you were so calling her elderly, and then you said like 50s, and I was like, oh, we're almost elderly.
No, I'm not. You are. I'm not. Don't lump me in. All right, really quick, we talk about California. Thank you, Nicole. Uh-huh. Thank you for the water. It's just, can I not get through one show without being a weirdo? Can I get one show without a problem? All right, so this is funny. So there's this post, and you can play the video, Nicole. There's no sound on it. But there is this whole debacle with California high-speed rail. You've probably seen it. So they put up a piece on social media from their government account. California high-speed rail, real progress, real jobs, real results. And they say, California is proving that we can still build big things in America. It's the largest clean energy project in the nation. 15,000 plus good-paying jobs. So Bill Malusian at Fox News quote tweeted that and said, not one piece of track has been laid. Not one piece of track has been laid. And of course, the problems with the high-speed rail in California go well beyond just the fact that one piece of track hasn't been laid, because if the project just started 5 years ago, then yeah, understandable that they haven't laid one piece of track yet, but they're still doing things. No, this is 17 years in the making. 17 years in the making. And they haven't laid one piece of track yet. So I was pulling up some of the recent headlines over this because I don't know what's wrong with me. My throat's really dry, I'm sorry. Because the Trump administration has said that it's going to stop the federal subsidies for this. Because after 17 years, there was estimated costs were around $33 billion in 2008. They're at $128 billion now. It reminds you of Sound Transit, doesn't it?
I was just going to say, I was trying to remember what the original dates were for Sound Transit. But
Transit debacle, Bertha, the tunnel boring machine, overages, billions over for all of these projects. But the California light rail takes the cake. I mean, 17 years out of money, It's going to, I mean, they don't even have an end date in mind, haven't laid a single track, and they're out there on social media talking about how it's the real progress, real jobs, real results. Okay, first of all, no real progress and no real results. And then real jobs, yeah. You've given people some pretty good jobs for 17 years, expanding the program out for that long, jobs that were probably supposed to last 10. Like, oh, this has been what I've done my entire life, is work on California high-speed rail. Absolutely insane. But there's a theme here.
I feel like they just throw out those dates to get it approved. Mm-hmm. Because if you actually said, this is going to take us 50 or 60 years, everybody would be like, well, technology will change in that amount of time. So that's a ridiculous goal. And so they just say, oh, we'll be done in 20. And then they're like, oops, it's going to take a bit longer. But it's already started. So
and
we
you
have
can't
to
do anything yet.
Doing it.
Yeah, we can't just give up, right? Can't do anything. We're boring a tunnel under the city. We can't just stop in the middle of the city of Seattle. All right, let's get to comments, because I don't know how much more my throat's going to hang in there. You might have to help me with some comments, but we've got a killer closing sanity check for you today. All right, Baron, you want to go every other?
Well, yeah, let me grab a couple more for you, too.
Baron of Gray Matter, $5 Super Chat. You have it backwards. SPD was protecting the Antifa Transtifa from the old people. This is a state-supported death cult. Call it what it is. Tom W. moved to Washington 20 years ago, and the first thing I see on television is a woman in Seattle who sued so she could marry a building. After
I remember that.
You do? I remember that. After that, I knew we were in trouble. That was the beginning of the end. Mm-hmm. All right, do you want to do Joanne?
From Joanne, I think I would have had a hard time if I was one of the around those people. I'd have to turn around and give them a piece of my mind.
Yeah.
It is difficult, but they're so obnoxious. It, like, you just laugh and feel sorry for them.
They're really unintelligent. And they're deeply unserious people. So it's hard to, like, you're not going to be able to have a legitimate conversation with them. And I'm not saying they're not dangerous, because obviously they're dangerous.
Well, there's
but they're so unserious.
It's two groups. Like, the people dressed in black and then the sad people singing weird songs and holding up the, like, you know, God is trans signs. Like,
no, it said God is a dyke.
Well, there's one of those too, but I think there was a couple.
Oh, they were chanting God is trans.
Yeah. But I think that those people just make me sad, because I'm like, you are lost souls. And then the Antifa people, I'm like, you people all need to be in jail and you need to go home to your basements and find new jobs.
Federal prison for sure.
Yeah.
All right, on rent control, DC's bees. Nope, rent control is just a way for the big rental companies to end up with more rental properties. It pushes all the small owners out of the market, and that's what it'll do. And who do Democrats say they hate? All the big scary landlords. Okay, well, the big landlords are going to be just fine. The small landlords, not so much.
From Lisa, small property owners are selling their properties or letting them sit vacant rather than rent them to property when property owners have no rights, and evicting renters who don't pay rent is practically impossible.
Yeah.
It is. I mean, why would you get yourself into that right now?
And it sucks, because that's such a good form of passive income for individuals who made smart financial decisions, got rental properties. You know, we're going to fund their retirements with that. Mm-hmm. It was going to be something they could continue to get a source of income during retirement. Mm-hmm. But if you have one bad tenant, you're going to lose everything.
Eat away your savings.
Right. Absolutely horrible. And there's nothing the law lets you do about it. All right. Greg on the artwork. Seeing this art, I know my 4-year-old should be selling his preschool paintings now. Yeah. And again, art's subjective. What's my taste isn't necessarily yours, but I don't know whose taste that is. And it's also dark and brooding. It's in an elementary school. And it's like, looks like blood smears.
Fish dreams?
Maybe we should try to get Sarah Seastream on the show.
Oh.
Would that be fair?
She'll love it.
Why should you get $20,000 for that? That looks like crap. Is that mean? Am I being mean?
I think that is pretty accurate. But good for her. It's just ridiculous that, like, I'm more upset with people giving her the money than she is for taking it.
Yeah, I'd give you $50 for those.
You would?
I would not. if I had to place a value on them.
Can I tell my funny story about my little Temu purchase from the weekend?
Yeah, sure.
So I bought this, what is it called? A jackalope. So we went to this restaurant and they had jackalopes all over it with Senator Braun.
Yeah, we went with Senator Braun and his wife. Yeah. We were down for an event and we toured his business, which was so cool. Braun Enterprises. And then we went to this place and there was a jackalope sitting there.
Yeah.
And I was like, is that a real creature?
Because
we were all
Googling it. We were like, it's mythical.
it looked like a stuffed real creature. I was like,
they did have stuffed rabbits with little horns put on them.
I was like, is that a real thing somewhere on Earth? and everybody made fun of me, and apparently it's mythical. And then Nicole got this on Temu.
Right, but I didn't tell Brandy. So that was like $5 on Temu months ago. And I just kind of hid it in the studio, and then you found it, right?
I was like, what is this?
Kind of funny. And then I was in, I'm not going to call them out because the poor people that put this on their wall, it was probably donated to them, and they were like, wow, look at this cool jackalope thing. But I went to an antique store this weekend, and that was on the wall for $30.
The actual Temu?
Yes. What? That's why I sent it to you. I was like, this is the actual Temu one.
So you're saying that they bought this from Temu, or someone brought it in and they have it on their wall for $30?
Yes. It had it seems like they had put
this
it on
like
a different
paper.
Plaque thing. But yeah, it was the same thing.
Okay.
Anyway, but so be aware.
All right.
Temu is good.
Okay. With that, let's do our closing sanity check, shall we? Today in our closing sanity check, Pete Hegseth had this to say.
No more pronouns, no more climate change obsession, no more emergency vaccine mandates, no more dudes in dresses. We're done with that shit.
Oh, we're done with that shit. And I love it. I love it so much. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. A special thank you to our paid subscribers who help make this wonderful show possible, where we can all sit around and laugh at the crazy and have fun and bask in how sane we are compared to the rest of the world. UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. You just click on the banner that says support the show for $5. And there you have it. All right, we'll see you back here tomorrow. Stay tuned for a new episode of Doge Watch coming out tonight. I lied. We have two super chats I didn't get to. Bill Biz, $20 super chat. Strong law enforcement is a foreign concept in Seattle. And Papa Woody, $2 super chat. Telekinetic boop inserted here. I always forget the boop on Unbelievable, don't I? Sorry, guys.
Sometimes you just get excited.
Well, you've gotten this whole story about the jackalope, and I missed the super chats. Okay, farewell.